There was a buildup of time and tasks to accomplish that. My heart was just longing to be with you all. As was mentioned earlier, most of my time is spent with middle school children. I love it. I feel there's a mission there. But I was so excited to be with ladies today. It was great. I was asked to speak on anger, and one of the things that came to my mind was Pilgrim's Progress, because it's a story, an old story, about a journey, and a journey from the house of destruction to the celestial city. Has anybody here ever read or heard about Pilgrim's Progress? Yeah. Okay. So when I was a little girl, my mother read Pilgrim's Progress to me, and I can still remember, I was young, but I can still remember being completely caught up with the story as he slugged through the Slough of Despond and was captive in the Castle of Despair and was tempted by Vanity Fair, and then he's dropping his burdens at the cross and then finally making it to the celestial city. But now, as a wife and a mom of many years, I realize I personally have walked every mile of that journey. And it was dangerous and it was thrilling. So today, I want to invite you to take the journey with me. And we're going to walk at this time, and the burden that we're going to carry is anger. Here we go. I think with good friends, you will admit certain issues, maybe a struggle with weight, or maybe your fatigue that's overcoming you. But there is a sisterhood around certain issues, but not everyone. Moms deal with anger, and sometimes they deal with it alone. They're afraid to admit what they're... Excuse me. Is this working for y'all? Okay, good. Okay, I've got it. Okay, they're afraid to admit... because it's the idea of you're not allowed to feel that way. But actually, it's the worst thing you can do to push down this cycle of that you get into of frustration and then explosion and then deep regret and then promising yourself you're never going to do it again. But instead of getting in the shadows of anger, I want us to walk in the light today and take a journey together. So let's do it. Are you ready? All right. We're pilgrims, and the first thing you need to do, and I have to do, is we need to look at our problem. And the pilgrim's problem can be diagnosed with one simple question, and the simple question is, what is it that rules my heart? Isabel. Isabel is angry at her 10-year-old daughter who just doesn't do her homework or struggles to do her homework. And Isabel tends to react and go over the top with this issue. So when Isabel explores the question, what rules my heart, she begins to understand that underneath the anger, she's actually ruled by fear. She's ruled by fear of failure. She's ruled by fear that her daughter will not be successful. She's ruled by fear that she as a mom is not successful. She's ruled by fear in general. And the issue here is that we don't parent our children based on their behaviors. Actually, we parent our children based on our interpretation of their behaviors. And our interpretation springs from what rules our hearts. And I just want to apologize. I usually give a handout, and this time I didn't have time. And so I put pieces of paper in case you want to jot anything down. But this was an eye-opener to me to realize I'm really reacting to my children based on my interpretation of their behavior. And my interpretation is based on what rules my heart. And so the kingdom of Isabel's heart is ruled by fear and by this fierce need for security, which manifests in self-control. If you think about it, that screaming child or the self-absorbed mate that you might have at times or the unreliable friend or the disappointment that you have with your own mom, those are issues that trigger anger, but they're really not the source of it. They're triggering what rules my heart. So when you ask the question, what rules my heart, you're asked to look inside of you and you want to see what expectations do I have that have been threatened or denied. And that is the way that I see my motives. I can see my motives because they're always centered on protecting or defending whatever it is that's ruling my heart. So what ends up happening, I end up basically shouting in my spirit, my kingdom, what rules my heart, my kingdom has been violated. My will about what should be done has not been done. I want to have judgment or maybe even wrath on anything that gets in the way of my sense of what is right and what should be done. What I had to face up to, and still continue to, is that what I deep down fear or want can hijack my emotions, my reactions. It can make me captive to it. So, anger management in dealing with specific situations is definitely needed. But what rules my heart is what I need to get long-term help with. And so that's where we're going to go today. Suzanne. Suzanne loves being a wife. She loves being a mama. She's got 4 kids, but she struggles with feeling unrewarded and unappreciated. You see, her husband is going through his own personal crisis, so he's not really aware of her and her needs. Her days are consumed with 4 kids and mundane tasks. She's continually sacrificing herself for the needs of others, and although she's outwardly calm, Suzanne is starting to simmer, and she's increasingly resentful. Those are the presenting issues. But the million-dollar question for Suzanne is what? What is the million-dollar question? What rules my heart? And for Suzanne, her personal kingdom is trapped in this struggle for self-worth, for identity. And so she withholds, in subtle ways, she withholds herself from her husband. She's waiting for him to give her a sense of worth and identity. And she's perfectly polite, but there's that iciness, that anger underneath. Now, she can legitimately get help with stopgap measures, and that's a legitimate thing to do, get a babysitter so she can do something and find refreshment, or confront her husband. That's a legitimate thing to do. But the issue is not going to disappear until she grapples with what rules her heart. And so anger is really a messenger. It's like a red light that you go on and see in your car, and you don't concentrate on just the red light on the dashboard, the presenting issue. You use the red light as a messenger to say, open up the hood. What is underneath? What is ruling my heart that's at the center of what's going to cause me to be angry? Here we go. Beneath the hood of many of us, we have unmet expectations, we have shame, we have guilt, we have a sense of powerlessness, or maybe a struggle with our identity and our self-worth. Whatever's ruling your heart is what you need to go and get help with. But that's the next issue. Where do you go for help? And so people who are angry, they normally go to the wrong person for help. They go to themselves, and if you go to yourself, you just start rehearsing the wrong. They can go to the people they're mad at, and if you go to them, you just start condemning the wrongdoer. Or you can go to other people, but often the other people you go to, you end up just gossiping and complaining over and over again. And so what I want to bring to us to think about is that if we talk to anybody who doesn't ultimately point us to God's common grace or his revealed word, we're going to the wrong person. Now, I'm not saying that you can't talk to people who aren't Christians, because God's common grace can bring the truth through non-Christians. But ultimately, after we deal with the strategies for specific situations, we have to know that anger is not going to be completely resolved until we talk to the right person, the ultimate person who can bring us the truth. So what I want to ask myself is, because you need to be guided by the truth, the central question that I have to ask is, am I guided by truth or am I guided by lies? So now as pilgrims, we've seen our problem. We know we've got to get help. And let's go to the guide that we need. And are we going to be guided by truth or lies? So I'm looking at my life, and this is the way I see my life many times, that I'm living down in the puzzle pieces. There's a jigsaw puzzle of life, and I'm down in those puzzle pieces. And there are hundreds of little pieces, sometimes thousands of little pieces, if you look at the totality of your life. There are these little plot twists and little snips of ant-like stories that I'm constantly interacting with. And my tendency is to live down in these puzzle pieces, these worrisome snips of life. And I hope, and I cry, and I strategize, and I plod right down there in the puzzle pieces. But puzzle pieces are short-term. Puzzle pieces are pass the test, cope with a disability, win an argument, pay off the debt, get a new job. And living in the puzzle pieces, what we do is you get terribly short-sighted, and you get misled, and you get blind. And so what you and I need to do, we need to keep in mind, well, what do we need to keep in mind? The box top. And then the puzzle pieces are navigable if we keep in mind the box top. And the reason I need the box top is the box top shows me my mission. It reminds me of my real mission. It also reorients me toward my rightful treasure in life. It can realign me toward the long view, and it can let me, or it can help me, and trust. And so everybody has a box top. You all have box tops. The only issue is a box top that is sufficient and truthful. And so I'm going to let us think a moment about the biblical box top of life. So here's your biblical box top. And your biblical box top is going to tell you and remind you over and over what your true treasure is and what your real mission is in life. So much of your frustration comes when you get spiritual amnesia, and I get it every day. I forget every single day. So I grapple with life's grievances, the injustices, the slights, the fears, the failures, the frustrations, because I'm not constantly checking my strategies against the box top of life. And everybody knows that when you get angry, you get short-sighted, you know, and you say and you do things that you later regret and you promise to never do again. And you do it because your mission has shifted to battling for these little puzzle pieces. So what we need to do is whip out that box top over and over again to guide our hearts toward the mission and the treasure of our heart. Let's look at the true treasure of our heart. Okay, I'm going to say something radical. And it's hard for me to even say the words because I have to say them by faith. You know, that might be mine. And it's an emergency if it is, but just take my purse and throw it out there. Just throw it out there, okay? So I didn't even put this on the PowerPoint. It's actually hard for me to write it. I know it's true. I believe it. But it's radical. The mission, okay, my treasure, Christ, not my family, is my true treasure. That's hard to say. But Christ, not my family, certainly not success or security. Christ, not my family, is my true treasure. Being a deep treasure of my heart is just too great of a burden for my children and my husband to bear. It's a role they can never fulfill. And it's a setup to get angry. If your family is your ultimate treasure, you're set up to get angry. And what I've discovered is that the reason those things have power over me, my husband, my children, my friends, my boss, is because I've looked in the wrong place for my treasure. And here's what I'm starting to learn. No, I've been learning it for 45 years, but I'm starting to really dig into this, is that by loving God more than I love my husband, by loving God more than I love my children, I'm actually able to love my family more. Y'all, has that happened for some of y'all? Okay. So now we're going to go here. Let's get the next one on the box. How is my mission? So remembering your mission is key in terms of dealing with anger. My mission, your mission, is to nurture life in your home, in your church, in your work, in your culture, to nurture life by the power that God gives. That's our mission. And the first woman, Eve, she was given that mission. She was called the mother, the nurturer of life, the mother of all life. And you don't need to have children to be a mother or a nurturer of life. So your mission is not success, it's not perfection, it's certainly not the trophy family. That is not our mission. Our mission is by the power of God to live a life of dependence and nurture life, to nurture life spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, physically. So I'm using the verb nurture intentionally because your mission is not to be the designer. A nurturer is not a designer. And so I really love to design my family, and I love to design everything in my life. But if you're a designer, you're going to become anxious. And so my mission is not to be the anxious designer of my family. My mission instead, and this is very beautiful to me, my mission is to be a tool of God's grace. And there's this wonderful quote by a woman, she's long dead, back in the 19th century, and she said, "I am a little brush that Jesus has chosen to paint his image in the souls entrusted to my care." That's just so freeing. So when I came to speak to y'all today, I thought, I'm not the designer of what's going to happen here. I'm not the designer of the timing. I'm not the designer of your hearts or anything. Lord, help me to be a brush in your hand. And that was so freeing for me because designers, y'all know it, designers become anxious and angry as they attempt to bend the world to their will. But tools are trusting. Tools are trusting in the hand that holds them. So I'm asking us, are you woman enough for your mission? Are you woman enough for your mission? Honest answer. What do you think? My honest answer is absolutely not. I'm not. I tell the truth. No, I am not. But God's more than enough for my mission, and he's my treasure. He's more than enough, and here's what I've actually really centered on right now in my current situation in life, that a godly woman is set up to navigate anger or anxiety or whatever you want to put in the blank, and that because I can be effective when I live in this paradox right there, I'm adequate only because I'm desperately dependent. I've been through a lot of mommy wars in my life. I've been through a lot of spiritual wars in my life. And even though I'm an older woman, I think I'm the oldest woman in this room. I am. I'm 68. Anybody older than 68? No, I'm the oldest woman in this room. Okay. I have not emerged as a brave mom. What I have emerged is a desperately dependent mother, a trusting mother. And I am still living with unsolved puzzle pieces, but I'm trusting in God's big picture, his box top vision of life. And if I don't keep that box top vision in life, I'm going to be overrun by the smaller plot twist, these ant stories, and I can just give in to a deceptive vision of life. So I can declare to you confidently, I am trusting God with a freedom that I've never had before in my life. And I'm desperately dependent. And that's the way I go forward with unsolved puzzle pieces. What I believe, and I know you do too, at the root of anger, you'll find lies. So let's ask ourselves, what are the lies that you're telling about yourself? And what are the lies that you're telling about God that you need to replace with the truth? Let's just look quickly at four lies that we typically tell ourselves and see the truth that we need to replace it with. Four angry mom lies, actually. The first one that you can tell yourself, especially when you're angry, is I'm alone. I'm alone in my anger. And that's a lie that isolates us. It's a lie that isolates us from getting help, and we forget that we've got a good shepherd. So the truth is, I'm not alone. God walks down the hall with me. I have a good shepherd, and I don't want to cut myself off from his treasure and his mission. So here's the truth that I tell myself, and I preach it to myself. You are with me, even in the valley of death. You're with me. I'm not alone. Don't fear. I am with you. Next lie that an angry mom can have, or you can apply to any situation. I'm trapped. There's no way out of this situation. My husband, my kids, my in-laws, my job, my disappointment, my resentment, my failure. There are no other options. Nothing is going to change. I can't see anything beyond the options or the solutions I've tried. And the truth is, God's merciful. And the truth is, He's promised not to give me more than I can endure. And I love this verse. No temptation is taking you. God's faithful. He will not let you be tempted. He will provide a way out when you get to the point that you can't take it anymore. He will. And then I love this one. I'm walking through a terrible situation. He's going to provide a way out. He's going to restore my soul. He's going to give me a green valley somewhere in that terrible situation. And then, of course, this verse, the sovereign Lord comes with power, especially to young mamas and old mamas who are still carrying the young in their heart. He's there. Okay, last little lie I want to look at real quickly. I can't change. I'm trapped in this pattern. It's for some... Y'all heard about addictions. Well, people don't realize that anger can become an addiction, too. It's an addictive response. And, you know, anger is not the presenting issue that I struggle with. I guess I struggle with anxiety. That's my addictive response, is anxiety. So whatever your issue, the lie that you tell yourself is, it's so strong, I don't feel I can overcome it. And here's the truth that we can use to replace it. I'll measure my bondage by God's power. So if you are a fearful woman and you're always looking at worst-case scenarios and trying to have control to ward them off, tell yourself this truth. I measure my bondage by God's power. He's faithful, and He actually stakes Himself on bringing me through this trouble. Back to Psalm 23. He leads me for His name's sake. He's staking Himself on bringing me through this trouble. And then Philippians. He will complete what He started in me. And then, of course, the great promise, all things are possible with God. With me, they're not. But with Him, He can break this bondage. Lie here. I'm not cut out for this. I'm not as good as other moms. I'm not as good as other wives. I'm not as good as other Christians. I'm not as good as other teachers. I'm not as good as other friends. I don't have what it takes. And that's when your identity is totally messed up. And here's the truth. To preach to yourself, God is at work in my life. And He's going to give me His life. So my identity in Christ is secure. Nobody can take that away. And what I go to truth like this. I'm a new creation in Christ. I'm His masterpiece. He's got all the good works He wants me to do, and He's creating this masterpiece in me. And I am of great value to Him. Infinite value. When it comes to anger, you must preach the truth to yourself. And if you don't preach the truth to yourself and about God Himself, will never change. We'll just keep getting stopgap coping measures, but not change the truth. From the moment you were born, now I wish I could hold up this computer and actually act it out. Okay? But pretend that I'm holding up the computer and I'm typing on the keys, okay? From the moment you and I were born, everything we heard, everything we saw, everything we experienced was typed into our personal computer through our five senses. And then the messages were stored in our hard drive. Every message you've ever gotten is stored in your brain. And that's the job's brain, to record everything. However, the brain will record what's not true also, the lies. And so as we grow, we repeat these messages to ourselves. I'm alone. I'm trapped. It's hopeless. I'm fearful. I'm not good enough. And the law of repetition goes into effect. So as you repeat these messages, the neural pathways in your brain, they've been repeated so much that these grow into highways. And they grow into super highways. And you're programming who you are with these messages. But the great comfort comes. And I love this because science and God's truth back it up. The great comfort comes is an eternal hope that your program can change. You know, scientists used to believe, and even when I was really young, because I was born in 1950. So when I grew up, they believed that the brain was malleable up until like your 20s or something like that. And then it was fixed for life. You pretty much solidified your thinking. And now that is going to completely overthrown. And it's known that your brain is malleable or plastic up until the very day you die. And that's why you can change. It's God's gracious and wise design in us that through the law of repetition, new messages of truth can reroute those old neural pathways, those old programs, and God's wired us to actually substantially change. The process of replacing lies with truth. So it's really crucial the kind of script that you have in your mind is a script of truth or lies, because you're actually ad-libbing from that script all the time. Angry Isabel, she brings her fears of lies. Resentful Suzanne, she brings her self-worth lies, and she reroutes those pathways with God's truth, and she can change from the inside out and begin ad-libbing from a new script of truth. So now we're going to start where most talks start. Most talks skip that heart issue and start right here with strategies. But when you get your heart issue, that long-term issue, then you're replacing the lies with the truth, and you're ready to use the strategies of coping with anger. Let's take out our backpack and look at some strategies. And the topic of this little section is going to be how to redeem the worst day of your parenting life. Or imagine the worst day of your marital life or the worst day of your sisterhood life. Just imagine a bad day. The thing you got to remember is that whatever person you're dealing with is a lost sheep. Your husband, your child, your friend, even your mom, who you think of as being more mature, everybody you deal with is a lost sheep. And what is God's heart about lost sheep? What does God say about lost sheep? What did he come to do? He came to seek and to save the lost sheep. And so it doesn't make any sense to get angry at somebody who's lost. We need to give them what they need. And what a lost sheep needs, whether it's a husband or a child or whatever, what a lost sheep needs is compassion and hope and wisdom. Now, wisdom can bring confrontation, but it's in the package of wisdom. So a lost sheep needs compassion, a lost sheep needs hope, and a lost sheep needs wisdom. So what we need to do to live redemptively is to use your mounting frustration, your anger. You know, anger can propel you toward good. You have to recognize an issue with anger. But use your mounting frustration and your anger as a signal to do what I have called, this is my little makeup thing, and I got it years ago from a woman who was a colonel in the Army. And she was using it for a completely different situation involving high command. And she wasn't even thinking about these issues. But I just remember the phrase. And so I've taken the phrase and applied it and used scripture with it. Use your frustration to go lower, slower, closer. And let's just unpack these. Go lower. First way you go lower is you lower your voice. Because you know that yelling and threatening will not help you reach your mission of nurturing life. It won't help you reach your mission of opening your child's or your mate's heart to redemptive change. And your goal is not victory or dominance over your kid. Your goal is long-term change. Try it. Just lowering your voice makes people really pay attention to you. Next is lower your fears. Preach the truth to yourself to lower your fears. God is the author of my story. Nothing is too complicated for him. That's the truth, and that can lower my fears. And then the next thing to do to lower your fears is to remember, anger comes when you ask your kids or your mate or your friend or your mama to give you what they will never be able to give you. So their compliance and their success, the way they look, the way they act, the way they treat us, it cannot be the basis of our well-being because they can't really give us what we're craving underneath. God is the author of our story, and he didn't give my children or my husband to me to build up my sense of identity. He gave my kids to me to build up his reputation, because what the Lord wants me to do is through all the good and the bad that come with being a mama or a wife, I would learn to trust God that nothing is too complicated for him, and that builds up his reputation. So So lower your fears. Now let's go lower. What's the next one? Lower. Slower. Okay, slow yourself down. Okay. Go slower because you're never going to be able to deal with a lack of character with a lack of character. And then go slower. Evaluate your priorities. Do you need to go into survival zone? Do you need to pare back what you expect normal to look like? And do you need to have a new ordinary in your life to slow down? And then secondly, you want to slow down your expectations. For example, kids don't have a concept of time. They just don't. They don't move quickly when you've got to get to church. They try on outfits three times before they go to school. You're the one with a concept of time. Kids take years to develop a concept of time and long-term consequences. Additionally, they don't really understand the danger of watching screens 5 hours a day. You're the one that understands long-term gratification and consequences. And it'll take years of coaching for your kids to get there. So just go slower in your expectations. And then finally, closer. Move closer physically. Don't withhold yourself. And guys, I'm watching the time, and I know I should stop in 2 minutes, and I'm not going to be able to. So right now, I'm just going to read it fast, okay? And we'll go through it. I apologize for that. The best part is yet to come, okay? Okay, closer. Move closer physically. Don't withhold yourself as a means of punishment. Timeout doesn't always work because the kid feels that you've withdrawn from him emotionally. And then third, be as physically close to your child as you can. Even when they don't want you to touch them, sometimes through humor, you can figure out a way to get close. Move closer emotionally. Don't begin with a lecture. Begin with a confession. Repent of any display of anger that you may have had and acknowledge that you both need God's help to grow. And then also, move closer spiritually. When you beat up your husband and your child with guilt, it doesn't produce lasting change. What produces lasting change is hope. And so share stories, share steps, insights that you're learning about how to change. It could be, though, that the only way you can move closer spiritually is just to know and let the person know that you are praying for them. Maybe that's all they can receive, is that you're praying for them. I'm going to skip the story. Move closer. redemptive anger. Redemptive anger, here's what it does. It spots the wrong, but then it remembers the box top vision. So the way to redeem the worst day of your life is have redemptive anger. Spot the wrong, but go back to your box top vision. I'm not the owner of my child or my husband. I'm not the anxious designer of my family. I'm a trusting tool in the hand of God's grace. And redemptive anger, it turns the fire of self-justification to humility. And when you're humble, that opens the door for a teaching moment that can transform something ugly into something beautiful. And now the pilgrim's future. And this is the part, I'm in the future of y'all, okay? But this can be the mindset that you have right now. And it redeems everything. Okay, pilgrim's future. Refuse to live with regret about the past. Just refuse it. It's dangerous and it's debilitating to live with regret, because what regret does, it forgets the cross, regret steals your hope, and it paralyzes you. So instead, live with what God says is true. And these go to Romans 8, and y'all can study it and you'll get it. God says there's no condemnation if you've given it to the Lord. He promises to work your worst mistake together for his good if your heart wants to please him. And also, he says nothing you do can take you away from my love. I'm not ever going to forget some of the wrongs that were done to me as a parent. I'll never forget some of the things that I did wrong as a parent. But God's promise is that I don't have to be defined by it. I can be defined by this. No condemnation. He works everything together for good, and nothing can separate him from me from his love. And then also, right now, refuse to live with regret about the present. Basically, what I'm asking you to do is don't reject the good God offers because you expect some other good. Don't reject the good God offers you every day because you expect some other good. And I've got the picture of Christmas up here because I was anticipating a much longed-for fairy tale Christmas with my little granddaughter in Texas several years ago. You can imagine. I won't describe to you all I was expecting. And then I got there. Smack dab crash. I broke my hip. And I was in a Waco hospital for a week with blood transfusions. I was in a nursing home for 2 weeks with rehab. And along with my hip, my expectations for that time with my granddaughter were shattered. God had another good for me, though. A good that my heart was actually able to receive. A good that happened with my mother bonding with my grandchild and with my daughter-in-law taking that leadership role in our family in such a gorgeous way that she did. Skip all the details. So what I want you to know, though, is in our anger and our disappointment, we can get really salty with God. And we can refuse the good that he wants to give us because it wasn't the good we expected. So if you refuse to let God surprise you with good, you're missing out. What's the opposite of anger? Ask yourself that question. I asked my husband, what's the opposite of anger? He said, contentment. It didn't ring true with me because contentment was mild and anger is vicious. And I started to think, what for me is the opposite of anger? For me, the opposite of anger is gratitude. Because gratitude is when I choose to give thanks even when one good was expected, but God gave me something else. You can't be angry when you're giving thanks. So, dear ladies, you and I are in the Olympics of Trust. Our mission is to nurture life because that's what God's called us to do. But you and I can do it. Jesus is with us. He's on call 24/7. He reprograms our mind with his truth. He comes closer and slower and lower with us so we can do that with other people. And he can help us forsake regret because he is the one who is writing our story. So our pilgrimage is not just away from anger, it's toward him, our treasure in our celestial city. Guys, I've loved being with y'all today. I'm so sorry about the 5 minutes of extra time. I'm sorry.